This is a republic if you can keep it. Political news and commentary with Mark Brewer and Jeff Timmer.
I'm Jeff Timmer. Welcome to the Trump Trials, Episode 1 edition of A Republic If You Can Keep It. History will be made this week as the first ever criminal trial of a former president gets underway. Trump announces his whatever wishy-washy abortion policy during a total eclipse, only to have an Arizona court ruling put his weasel words in a harsh spotlight. Federal court has rejected Republican efforts to overturn Michigan's voter-approved election reform laws.
And I'm Mark Brewer. The Republican National Committee is fundraising with a robocall that repeats the big lie that the 2020 election was stolen, which should come as no surprise from the Laura Trump-run subsidiary of the Trump Companies, which is now the RNC. The House Majority PAC has announced a nearly $200 million advertising buy, with a large chunk of it focused on three important congressional races in Michigan. And finally, Michigan Democrats are serious about restoring the party's standing in rural Michigan. Jeff and I are recording and attending the Michigan Democratic Party's annual Rural Caucus Summit. And in a moment, we'll be joined by the leader of the Michigan Democratic Party Rural Caucus for a discussion about those. But Jeff, before we get to that, you mentioned this Arizona court ruling. It seems like week after week, we just can't escape the fact that abortion is going to be a front and center issue in this year's election.
It was certainly the central organizing principle in 2022, and any Republican hope that it was going to dissipate as an issue that cut against them has always, I think, been delusional. But you can tell the palpable fear that Republicans feel about the issue. I remember saying way back in when the Dobbs ruling was leaked ahead of time in the spring of 2022, that this was going to be the ultimate dog catching the car when it came to the Republicans. Now what? They loved having abortion as an issue that they could run on, provided it didn't actually mean anything in the real world. And they were successful at using that as a motivational issue for their base for years and for decades. But now the opposite is true. When people were confronted with the real world consequences, ramifications of that ruling, and people facing criminal charges, potentially women, doctors, nurses, anybody involved, people said, wait, that's insane. That's crazy. That's too far. And now you get Trump coming out and saying, well, I won't sign this national abortion ban. One, no one can believe a word he says, or that the Republicans aren't still going to push a national abortion ban. But then in his attempt to pivot on the issue or seem reasonable, the Arizona Supreme Court comes down and nullifies a 2022 enacted law, a law enacted by Republicans in Arizona, which then causes the 1864 zombie law to come back into force, and more than symbolically talks about where Republican policy and Republican elected officials want to take the country. The past versus the future argument is really what most elections always seem to be about, and the Republicans aren't going to be able to escape the fact that their path, should they come to power, leads to regression of rights in circumstances that we were dealing with 150 years ago, 160 years ago, instead of what we're going to be talking about going into the future.
Yeah, Jeff, this Arizona ruling was really stunning. Trump says, leave it to the states, and immediately we get this state court decision. And our listeners should understand, what the court did was reinstate an 1864 ban on abortion, a complete ban on abortion, except to save the life of the mother. So no exception for rape or incest or any other of those considerations. But Arizona was already going to have an abortion referendum on the ballot, and this just raised the stakes for that. And of course, Biden took Arizona in 2020. He needs to take it again. And there's also a pivotal Senate race there, with Kirsten Sinema stepping down. Democrats need to hold that seat in order to hold a majority in the Senate. And this is what Carrie Lake, the election-denying, MAGA-supporting, I think vice presidential wannabe for Donald Trump, who's now running for Senate in that state, in a very difficult spot in terms of this very, very issue. And this could be a deciding issue in that Senate race. And it'll have down ballot effects, as well as we've seen in terms of the legislature and other kinds of races there. So again, it's just remarkable how this issue keeps cropping up. And no matter how much Trump and Republicans try to avoid it, they can't. They're really going to have to deal with this issue.
Yeah, it is famous for the 1992 phrase during the Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush campaign. It's the economy, stupid. This time, it's the Dobbs decision, stupid. That really is going to be an overarching issue that people are going to be running on, not just at the federal level, but at the state level. And it's going to filter down to the local level. There's no divorcing the local Republicans from the national MAGA crazy. And I think it's going to lead to a potential opportunity for Democrats in places like these rural districts that we're going to be talking about later in the podcast.
Right. And also, too, just to update our discussion last week, in Florida, it's starting to sink in now just how much the abortion issue on the ballot in Florida is going to have an impact. Is Biden going to be able to take Florida on that basis? No. But as you pointed out, the Republicans are going to have to invest money there. And it could help Democrats, for example, win that U.S. Senate seat down there where Rick Scott was even vulnerable before that abortion proposal was on the ballot.
Absolutely. When you look at the presidential chessboard, you want to create opportunities for offense. And it's looked like for most of the last couple of years, at least, that Biden was decidedly on the defense in states like Nevada, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Arizona, and Georgia that he had won by relatively small margins in 2020. But people are forgetting states like Florida, that was very famously a purple state. It is not that far removed from competitive races. Ron DeSantis in 2018 won the governorship by a very small margin. Rick Scott won by just a handful of thousand votes in a statewide election. And there, it's not going to take much to put that state in the competitive column. Same with North Carolina, where the Republicans have a gubernatorial nominee who makes Donald Trump look like a choir boy. This guy is absolutely nuts, and he's just doubling down on the MAGA crazy. And there's opportunity for Democrats in North Carolina, in Florida. Nevada, where is another place where there, it looks like there will be an abortion referendum on the ballot at this fall. It's going to be something that the Republican, and you can tell by the Republicans' reaction, Carrie Lake is putting out this 5-minute video already about how abortion, she's personally pro-life, but thinks this is a decision for everybody to make up on their own. She's walked away from the position she took just 2 years ago in the gubernatorial campaign about how she wants to help eliminate Roe versus Wade. And she thinks she can somehow get away with this because Republicans have been so good at brainwashing their own voters that she thinks somehow this is going to appeal to those centrist moderate voters who are going to be deciding the election. And I think she's very wrong.
Well, Jeff, and another interesting, significant development this week, Trump has successfully evaded having to show up in a courtroom and defend himself now for months and months. It looks like finally there's going to be a criminal trial in New York for the next several weeks involving the legality of these payoff payments that were made to Stormy Daniels by the Trump campaign in an effort to, you know, cover up what happened there. So tell us about this and what you think the political impact could be.
I think the political impact could be far greater than conventional wisdom has come to see. When you think about this, the first time in American history that a president, current, former, or otherwise, has faced criminal charges. This is a holy shit moment. And because of the how numb we've become to the torrent of batshittery from Donald Trump, it almost feels like it's already baked into the cake. You're okay, people have their position on Donald Trump, whether he's criminal or not, doesn't matter to those who support him. But I question how true that's going to be when we see images of a president on trial. There are more sane people in the United States than there are insane people. There are more sane voters. There are more in the pro-democracy coalition than there are in the Trump MAGA coalition. And I think this is going to help be a galvanizing force for the same pro-democracy voters. Yes, this is baked into the cake. The news of Trump's 91 counts of felony indictments, four separate trials and jurisdictions that may or may not be happening over the course of this election year, are going to start to take their toll. When a campaign has to schedule rallies around when their defendant candidate needs to be in a state or federal courtroom, it does start to have real-world implications. And I think that's the optics of this are going to be working in Joe Biden's favor as the year goes on.
Yeah, just so our listeners understand what Jeff was referring to there, and this trial is going to be 4 days a week for what looks like 5 to 6 weeks. That'll have a tremendous impact on Trump's availability to other things. And actually, it's going to be televised, as you pointed out, which I think is actually hurtful to Trump, right? His histrionics, his performance in the courtroom, nobody's going to see it. Instead, we're going to have reports about what's going on in the courtroom. He'll give his usual post-trial, post-day in court, press conferences and so forth like that. But we're not going to see him performing in a courtroom like we've seen in some of the other trial settings he's been thrust into.
Right. And I think so many norms have been assaulted in this last nearly decade now. It's not just our political, legislative, and executive system that has fallen under assault. It's the entire judicial system, the third branch of government as well, is under partisan political assault. And I don't think that's going to change. And so far, the judicial system has bent to allow Trump to get away with things, behavior, comments, continued comments that no other defendant in the country would be allowed to do. This preferential treatment under the justice system, I don't think is lost on a lot of people. And it's going to be, it's uncertain how the judicial system is going to come out of this. We have a potentially corrupted Supreme Court with Clarence Thomas and all of his noted extravagant, the position of his wife and possibly him in the efforts after, during and after the 2020 election to overturn the results of a free and fair election, already put the court in a compromising position. Now, if we start to see trial courts in such a compromising position, if people don't have any faith in the outcome, the rule of law, the last pillar of our system will have fallen. And so I think these trials are very important. They have to be result in a conviction in order to restore the faith, but it certainly seems the preponderance of evidence would say that that's the case.
Yeah, Jeff, no, you make a great point. I'm glad you made it. Trump is firmly in control of the National Republican Party. Heck, it's basically a family-run operation at this point. He's firmly in control of the Congress. We just saw that where he killed one of the best border security bills the country's ever seen just because he wanted to run it on his campaign. So both branches of Congress under his firm control. He controls most of the state parties in the country. And the judiciary, state and federal level, is really the last bulwark. He managed to appoint a lot of folks to the federal courts in his first term. And he has been systematically bullying and cajoling, threatening state and federal judges for the last couple of years as he has faced this onslaught, as well as the prosecutors and others that are trying to make the criminal justice system work. And this really is going to be a test now, as you pointed out, of can our judicial system withstand this thing, or is it going to succumb and be overrun and controlled by Trump as well?
Another reality and optics that we've seen, I can't recall a time in American history where one individual has exerted such autocratic control, not just over party politics, but over the function of government. Look at the Mar-a-Lago optics yesterday, where the Speaker of the House shows up in Mar-a-Lago to hold his press conference with Trump so that he can try to thwart the efforts by some Marjorie Taylor Greene and others to potentially remove him from his role as Speaker. it's clear that Mike Johnson is not in charge of the House Republican caucus. Donald Trump is. It's clear that Donald Trump has a plurality of Republicans in the Senate enough to control what that body does to prevent 60 votes from happening on important issues. Donald Trump is certainly controlling the Republican Party. He's controlling the legislative branch of the Republican Party. And in a lot of ways, he's controlling the function of government as a private citizen in a way that is really unprecedented. And that doesn't, I don't think that speaks to political power. It speaks to the dangerous position we're in of falling under autocratic power. This goes far beyond the norms of partisan politics and puts us in a dangerous position.
No, it does, Jeff. Well, I want to turn to something that wasn't news this week, and that is that the RNC, through their robocall and other things, is again going back to and running on the election denial nonsense that they peddled in 2020. We have robocalls coming out from the RNC. We have public statements. You spoke about the speaker at Trump. That was part of their message from Mar-a-Lago. This election denialism is going to continue. And it's having a corrosive effect on voter confidence in the system. And I think it's part of a scheme, as you have pointed out very astutely, to try to discourage people from voting and discourage people, no matter where they are on the political spectrum, from believing the election results. So it all plays to his reelection campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. Fear and anger are the main message of the Republican Party. And they really represent the Trump MAGA Republicans represent a minority in this country. Trump cannot win a majority of votes, and MAGA candidates cannot win majorities. They can punch above their weight, though, by wearing out through a war of attrition. People have become weary to the constant daily 24/7, 365 assault on norms and democracy. It feels like, why go through this if these guys are just going to keep doing this nonsense? If people are going to start just keep believing the bullshit. But that's part of apathy is the autocrat's friend. And I think what we need to prepare ourselves for is not just the aftermath of the election like we saw in 2020, but more disruption and disinformation, threats of violence, or things to stoke fear in Democratic vote strongholds, say like Detroit or Flint or Pontiac, creating fear of early voting, that there could be things like bomb threats called into voting locations, things like that, to whether or not they're actual, just to create the specter of potential violence. That's the kind of tactic that was used in Jim Crow South to suppress people's will to show up and vote. And that's the only way there are more of us than there are of them. The only way they can win is if we don't show up to vote, and we shouldn't be dissuaded. We shouldn't fall for these fear tactics, but we have to expect that they're going to happen.
The Politics of Rural Michigan with MDP Rural Caucus Chair Mark Ludwig. After these messages on a Republic, if you can keep it.
Epic MRA is pleased to sponsor this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with nearly four decades of experience measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, and public policy issues.
Our clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, all levels of state and local government, and membership organizations. For the November 2022 election, Epic MRA published the most accurate final pre-election poll among several state and national polling firms.
Our polls most closely predicted the actual election results in races for governor, secretary of state, and attorney general, as well as the three ballot proposals.
Epic MRA is clearly the go-to polling firm in Michigan. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
Ben Franklin may have invented the Franklin stove to stay warm, but we go Ben one better. We have the Ben Franklin hoodie, dedicated to Americans for sanity. But wait! there's more. Our merch store has coffee mugs for Democrats, uncrazy Republicans, and free-thinking independents, as well as t-shirts for the discerning democracy lover. Just click on the Merch Center link on our homepage, arepublicpodcast.com. Show your support for political sanity at the podcast merch store. It's your duty as an American.
Joining us today is Mark Ludwig, who is the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party Rural Caucus. Mark is a beef farmer from Allegan County and big in the conservation and environmental movement. And Mark, thank you for joining us today. Quite an event that you have going here, quite a lot of enthusiasm and bodies, more than I was expecting. Tell us about the Michigan Democratic Rural Caucus.
The Rural Caucus forms in 2017, really as a response to getting whooped out in the countryside and obvious panic about the Trump administration. And it has really been amazing how the caucus has just caught fire. I think there was a real hunger for it in the state of Michigan. And the attendance here shows we've got about 230 people at the Rural Caucus, our second Rural Caucus Summit, and it's been enthusiastically received.
Tell us, Mark, about some of the work that the caucus is doing and some of the great sessions at the summit this weekend. Tremendous material and speakers here this weekend. Tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, we're talking about everything from the mundane proper party governance and making sure that you're filling out your paperwork correctly, to the really difficult challenges like pushing back against the lies about the solar energy siting law that went into effect recently, and really everything in between. And the nice thing is, because we're here among friends, people are speaking to each other very frankly, and we're able to really drill down on these issues effectively in a way maybe in a more public forum we couldn't do.
Yeah, well, I've been very impressed. You've got high-level representatives of the Biden campaign here. The highest-ranking Biden campaign official in the state is here. Staff and representatives of the Democratic Party. You've had high-level Democratic elected officials either here or Zooming in, which is a great thing we can have this weekend. Seems to me that speaks to the importance of the Rural Caucus and the rural vote in Michigan. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And just looking at speaking specifically about this cycle, we got problems. We have problems with the Arab American community because of the Palestine issue, and similarly with our young people. There's a lot of work to be done there, and I really question whether those people are coming back in time for the fall election. And as the Rural Caucus, obviously we're interested in rural Michigan, but as you start to look back at the history of how we got to this point in rural Michigan, in rural America more broadly, we really feel like there's easier ground to make up there if we put the time, if we put the resources, and if we take it seriously. And that's really what we're all about.
Tell us about some of the focuses of the Rural Caucus in terms of this year's election. Recruiting candidates, what kind of messages you think are going to work in rural Michigan? Give us your perspective on that.
Well, as far as recruiting candidates, the more lines on that ballot we can fill with a D next to them, the better. Really, a big theme of our caucus, and I think a lot of the thinking, and it's more than just us thinking about kind of our problem in rural America. A lot of it has just been that we're not there. We don't show up. And I don't think the other team does a great job policy-wise for rural America. And in fact, if you look at the polling data, it says that our policies are much more popular than what the Republicans are giving them. But because we're not there, because we're not talking about it, because we're not contesting these elections, we're simply not getting our message out the way we ought to. So what do? We show up. I think there's a great deal to offer in the achievements of the Biden administration for rural Americans. Just talking about insulin and some of these prescription drugs, these are things that really affect rural people tremendously. And so I think there's a good story to tell, but we got to get out there and tell it.
Yeah, I think from the Republican side, there's a lot of taking for granted the margins that they expect to get from rural areas in Michigan and elsewhere. They may not be focusing the kind of attention they should on ginning up their turnout. And I think that provides perhaps an opportunity for rural Democrats to punch above their weight in some of these areas.
Absolutely. I think there's tremendous opportunities to, we call it losing less in a lot of ways. Are we going to elect a state house member in Allegan County? Probably not. We're going to try. We're going to run somebody, but it's a real heavy lift. But can we get 2%, 3%, 4% more Democrats? And that's enough. It's not a crushing victory for Biden if we do that, but it's enough. And that's a big focus this year.
Yeah, that's really important for the statewide races. Every vote counts. I tell people, and a vote in rural Michigan for a Democratic candidate is just as important as a vote in Wayne County for a Democratic candidate. It's equal. And so keeping all the margins down outstate is really, really important. But it also helps the Senate race. We're going to have a very competitive Senate race here.
Yes.
This year, which could determine the control of the Senate. And now, thanks to a fair redistricting, we've got some Democrats in the state house in rural Michigan. We got Joey Andrews along the Lake Michigan coast. We got Betsy Copia up in Leelanau, Grand Traverse. We got Jen Hill up in the Marquette area, and there are others.
Yeah.
So the chance of sending those people back and maintain the House majority.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll talk about Representative Andrews in specific because he's in Allegan County where I live. And that's this weird, skinny little district runs right along the lakeshore. And it was really won on the ground by focusing on where we knew our votes were and getting those people out and just really outmaneuvering Kevin Whiteford, who was the husband of Mary Whiteford, who was a fairly prominent and reasonably well-liked character in the Republican caucus. So it was no small thing to win that election. And he won it by about 2%, as I recall. So not a huge margin, but again, enough. So what's Joey got to do to get reelected? Well, number one, we've got to push back against some of the things that are being thrown at him. We had a big session we were just talking about the renewable energy siting legislation. One of his opponents is already putting out Photoshopped pictures of giant windmills next to prominent landmarks in the 38th district. And it's going to be having an answer when those kinds of things pop up. It is going to be super important. And frankly, the other thing is money. We actually secured some pretty good funding for all four of those candidates you mentioned, again, by talking about the importance of those seats from a prominent donor. And we have a PAC attached to our caucus, my rural PAC. We raised and spent thousands and thousands of dollars last cycle. I would like to raise and spend tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands this time around. I will probably not be running for anything this cycle. But one of the things we really want to do is just get myself out and around Michigan. And I think one of the greatest things the caucus could do is essentially pump money from Southeast Michigan out to the rest of the state. And really, you got to go down there and you got to sell the idea of what we're trying to do out here to some people who are sometimes skeptical. We're still, and we had a nice session this morning where we talked about some of the history of how did Democrats get to this point where we're so uncompetitive out in rural areas. We can turn that around. Now, can we turn it around for this election? We made some progress in 2020. I think we made more progress in 22. We need to make a lot of progress in 24. And if I can really hammer home anything, listeners, we need your money. We do. We need your money. The other team tends to be very well funded. They are better at us at pulling money from richer parts of the country and giving it to those people they need. So everything we could do to get our coffers filled up the next few months is going to be absolutely critical. So if you are a person who has a lovely beach house along Lake Michigan, who has a big yard in Oakland County, Macomb County, Wayne County, give me a call. I'll be there. We'll raise some money and we'll get it done out here.
Well, you can tell us how to donate to the Rural Caucus.
You can find us on Act Blue. You can get on our website and donate to us directly. I know some people don't appreciate Act Blue because they tend to get a lot more email after donating to Act Blue. That scares you. We'll be happy to take the checks. We're open for business, and we want to get it done out there.
I heard some good news this weekend, and this is a fight from cycle to cycle, that the Biden campaign is starting to open up offices in rural Michigan. There's a lot of national campaigns that don't bother with that. I learned this weekend they're going to be over in Iosco County in the Iowa City office of the Iosco Party. I learned this morning of Van Buren. There's going to be a Van Buren office And I know there's lobbying going on for elsewhere in the district. So it's really good to hear the Biden presidential campaign believing that they need to invest in rural Michigan.
Absolutely. And I'll throw a couple other counties out there. Allegan County is, you know, where our county party is going to share our office with the Biden campaign, and the Biden campaign is going to slide us some money to rent, to sublet that office for us. You know, that's money we will spend on. We'll get to the end of this cycle and we'll be pretty broke. We'll spend every nickel we can lay our hands on. I have heard there'll be an office in Marquette County. There'll be an office in Keweenaw County. And you start talking about Keweenaw County. Yeah. There's like,
it's like the Arctic Circle.
Yeah. It's the Arctic Circle. There's like 15 people. There's more bears than people up there. But this is a sign that the Biden campaign gets it, that they got to win Michigan. They got problems in other parts of Michigan. They got this, they got not only the Rural Caucus, but you got Project 83 working more from the institutional state party end of it. And they're doing the things they need to support these local county parties to pump them up and to have us ready to push out the signs and do those things. We were talking a little bit about signs. There's this thing that's become popular to say, signs don't vote. Well, signs give permission to vote out here. And signs help. I guess I say signs stiffen spines. We need, if you got to talk somebody into a little bit to putting that sign up in the yard and they're worried about the neighbors and all that, if that sign goes up and you make that commitment, what's the other commitment you're going to make? Well, maybe you'll make some calls. Maybe you'll become more involved with the county party and really, really do the things we need to do on the ground to get out there and win that thing, win this thing.
What you just said something that reminded me, and I was at a wedding up in Northport, up in Leelanau County in October of 2022. And I took a scenic route back from the wedding and I saw for the first time in memory, all kinds of Democratic candidates. There was Whitmer and Benson and Nessel and Kofia. I think that that was indicative of the hard work that was being done in that legislative race. But it was that permission structure that was evident to me, that saying you're not alone here, that difference between sometimes a 70-30 loss in some areas versus a 60-40 loss, and the difference it can make in a close legislative race or a close statewide race really makes a difference. And when you look at the kind of candidates that Republicans are running, I think it gives an opportunity for Democrats to make some gains in areas where people might not give them a lot of chance to win, betting odds. You mentioned the Joey Andrews district, and we've talked about the Betsy Kofia district. And whether or not their opponents are hardcore MAGA, is it whatever comes from the primary, the Republicans are offering no shortage of absolute batshit lunatics when it comes to the candidates that they're putting up and the kind of people that would be empowered should the Republicans win. Should Kevin Whiteford be a repeat candidate? If Kevin Whiteford were to get elected in that Shoreline district, he's going to go to Lansing and vote for batshit crazy MAGA leadership. And that's something that these candidates can't divorce themselves from. You've got a candidate, a legislator who represents part of Ottawa or Allegan County, who is handing out awards to the kidnappers of the folks that were brought to trial for the attempted kidnap of Governor Whitmer. And they're treating these people like heroes.
Yeah.
People like Kevin Whiteford can't divorce themselves from the legislators like this that are absolutely insane.
Yeah, I ran against that person, Representative Schmidt. And as long as we're talking about the Whitefords and Schmidt, let's just illustrate where the GOP has gone, because I ran against Mary Whiteford also. I had known Mary Whiteford for some time. She ran a cycle before I ran against her. And I had a reasonably productive relationship with Mary Whiteford, talking to her about issues with the local conservation district. I chair the conservation district board of directors. I was able to sit down with her after the marijuana initiative passed and had a productive conversation about not screwing up the taxation issues, because we were a year out at that time from California, who had taxed the snot out of weed. And like 80% of the drug dealers just kept right on going. It didn't really become a regularized industry because there were so many taxes applied to that marijuana. I contrast that with Representative Smith, who's actually a dairy farmer. And after she trounced me in the election, I made a point of sitting down with her and saying, hey, we would love to see your family farm go through the MEAP process, the Michigan Agriculture Environmental Assurance Program. This is a voluntary, non-regulatory, non-FOIable effort that the state of Michigan has out there to make sure that our farms are meeting their responsibilities under the agricultural rules that we operate under the state. And she was not willing to put her farm into that. She was not particularly receptive when I would talk to her about other kinds of issues. Ironically, she was not all that good at helping me get a proclamation for people that were retiring from the Conservation District Board. I ended up using Representative Andrews for that as well. I really feel like, you know, it used to be that the Republicans would get together, do nothing, and then brag about how they did nothing and it didn't cost anybody anything. And now they get together and they do nothing, and then they blame trans kids for all the problems of the world. It just, as you say, it just gets crazier and crazier, and it's just drip, drip, drip right along. And you look at the national level, Trump was a disorganized mess this first time around. And now the institutional right-wing organizations, the Heritage Foundation, which used to be nuts and super right-wing and da-da-da-da-da, and now it's like, here's the plan for fascism. Here it is. We wrote it out. We put it in a book and we sent it out. I haven't had time to read the whole dumb thing yet, but I read the chapter on agriculture. That's the policy stuff that I have the best grip on. Not only is it a lot of utterly unrealistic things in it, things that are probably never going to happen, but it talks quite a bit about getting rid of the farm subsidy programs that all those guys who are going to vote for Trump really, really need sometimes. Do you like buying crop insurance if you're a farmer? No. Do you like collecting that money when you get hailed out or rained out or frosted out? Well, yeah. Yeah, you need it. And it is baffling how people can look past these things. And I guess the other one that's really scary for me right now is my local county sheriff was one of those guys 2 weeks ago that got up on stage with Trump. I've literally never seen this guy in a sheriff's uniform until he gets up there with Trump in their little brown shirt rally that they had. And he gets up, talks about a girl whose body is barely even cold yet, how she got murdered by her boyfriend, implying that this guy was some guy who came across the border. He came across the border, but he was two. He wasn't even really what they portray him as. And my sheriff says, well, we've got to reelect Trump because of the border. Well, 6 weeks ago, Trump tanked the border bill, and it wasn't quiet. He was not quiet about tanking it. It really is just fantasy land. And I think that's where the vulnerability is, because there are people who see this. And it doesn't take that many Republicans coming over to our side this cycle to win this thing.
Well, Mark, with that, we're going to let you go, because I know you got responsibilities.
A few.
They're in the home stretch here. It's been a great conference. Thank you for your leadership of the Rural Caucus. This has been a great summit. And good luck to you and the Rural Democrats in the next several months.
Yeah, it's truly my pleasure and my honor to chair this caucus. And I'm standing on the shoulders of giants here. We've had some people who have just been tremendous leaders in this caucus. And that's why we're in the position we are today. And I've got to say, the two of you, this is required listening for me every week. And sometimes I go around twice because the information's so great. So right back at you. You guys are doing tremendous work, and we all really appreciate it.
Great.
Thank you so much. One thing we really love is praise.
Thank you very much, Mark. Good to see you. Good luck with the rest of the summit.
Gentlemen, thank you so much.
That's all for this week. Our thanks to all the folks here at the Michigan Rural Caucus Rural Summit for their hospitality to Jeff and I this weekend.
And our thanks to Mark Ludwig for joining us.
And if the Republic is still standing, Jeff and I will be back in a week. We'll talk with you then.